Welcome back to our National Signing Day Buckeye Talk. We had to find a place to do this, so we're in the lobby of a building with a paving conference potentially taking place around us. So if you hear paving talk in the background, that's what's happening, right? I don't know what paving talk sounds like, though.
I don't know. It seems like all the pavers have left, so.
Yeah, I think we just missed the paving conference.
Oh, it's over. Oh, I just thought it was going to start.
At least the registration.
Day one's over. It's a five-day conference.
Five-day conference. All right. Doug Lamorese, Tim Bielik, Bill Landish, your Ohio State coverage team for Cleveland.com. It was National Signing Day today. Lots happening on the Ohio State beat. We're going to talk about Urban Meyer's contract extension, Greg Schiano staying with the Buckeyes, and this 26-man class that was finalized today on the second National Signing Day. Five additional guys since the original signing day in December, but a really big one added today, and a second guy added today that was pretty kind of big. So we're going to get into that. You can read all of our stories. How many posts do we have today between football, recruiting, and some basketball things? What was the count?
I believe it is 25.
So if you have time to read
20, not including this.
Not including this. 25 different stories about Ohio State things. Go to cleveland.com/OSU. I'm going to start with a question, and we have some questions from you guys, too, that we'll get into. I'm going to start with a question that covers the two aspects of what happened today. One is the recruiting class, and two is the state of the coaching staff. So here's my question. Ohio State today landed, and we're going to say his name for the first time on the podcast. This is an educational experience for you. Say the recruit's name, Bill.
Nicholas Petit. Frere.
Now, it's Frere. There's not two syllables to Frere. The third part of that.
I'm incapable of saying that word with two syllables, so there probably is. I can't say it. Frere.
Is it?
Frere.
I'm excited because there's a couple French guys in this class. I'm a French guy. Okay. We're going to call him NPF.
I'm going to call him Nick.
Okay. NPF signed. He's the number one tackle recruit in the nation. They got him today in a battle with Michigan, Notre Dame, Alabama,
Florida,
and Florida. Huge get, and we'll get into that. But they also retained Greg Schiano, their defensive coordinator, who by many accounts was headed to the New England Patriots, and we'll get into that. But we're going to start with this. Given the choice, one or the other, what would you pick, and what do you think Ohio State would pick if there actually was a choice of you either get to keep Greg Schiano for this year or you get to sign NPF today? Tim, you go first. What would you pick, and what do you think Ohio State would pick?
Didn't think I was going first on this one.
You asked Urban Meyer three questions about Alex Grinch today. You get to go first.
Tim's on one today.
Okay, well, that's a hard question because the premise of your question is essentially that, like, the extenuating circumstance that Schiano could also be gone next year versus NPF, who we know should be here for a minimum of three seasons.
Well, we're just living in the world where you can't assume that you have Greg Schiano for more than a year. So all we're doing is saying what happened is what happened, which is he stayed. He's here for now. But you didn't get NPF. That's the one. The other is Greg Schiano announced today that he's leaving for the New England Patriots, but you did get NPF. So you can decide in your own head how long you think Greg Schiano might stay here, but we're operating under no guarantees because there are no guarantees.
I would pick Schiano, and I don't mean that as any slight against NPF or anything, but given what happened with Kerry Combs leaving for the NFL, I think you don't want to have too much defensive coach instability, especially because you brought in Alex Grinch already, who I'll have a story about on Thursday on Cleveland.com. You don't want to have to bring in two new guys, including your top defensive coach. You don't want to have to replace him along with Kerry Combs, who's done so much. So I would take Schiano just to keep some continuity, because you're going to have to get a new coach anyways. You want to keep that continuity there as long as you can.
You would take the coach. Would Ohio State take the coach, you think?
I think Ohio State would probably take the player.
I think you're right. I would take the player. I think Ohio State would take the player. I'm always going to take the player unless the coach is Urban Meyer or Nick Saban. I think those are the only two coaches where I might change my answer. It's especially that position. You're talking about a five-star left tackle, like foundational piece for 2 to 3 years, a guy who's going to really be an important part of your offense. I think coaches – is it too strong to say coaches are a dime a dozen?
How about a quarter a dozen?
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. A little more expensive. I don't know. I just think, like, the impact of coaches, especially in college, I think can be a little overrated. It's about the players. It's always about the players, so I'm taking the player every time.
Here's the thing. I would take the player in this circumstance because I'm absolutely certain that this is Greg Schiano's last year at Ohio State.
So, I think you might have said that last year, though. So weird circumstances.
He's been here 2 years, right?
Yeah, this will be his third.
This is his third?
Yeah.
So he took a head coaching job. Greg Schiano took a head coaching job. And then the world exploded.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, Greg Schiano took a head coaching job. So I'm absolutely operating under the assumption that this is it for him. So my question is, what's the only way to me that you take Schiano over the player is if you think Greg Schiano can be the difference this season between winning a national title and not winning a national title with his on-field coaching of this defense, and that you think the person that you would have replaced him with, and frankly, the person you would have replaced him with is Alex Grinch, who's already here. You just would have given Alex Grinch more responsibility. However they work this out, Greg Schiano's going to be in charge of the defense, and Alex Grinch is going to be right by his side, learning, contributing, helping, being a co-defensive coordinator. But Alex Grinch has already been a defensive coordinator. If Schiano wasn't here, they wouldn't have had to hire another defensive coordinator. They would have had one in Alex Grinch. That's why he's here. So now I'm asking an additional question. Do you think what I'm trying to do here before we delve more?
I had the question, actually. Well, you're answering my question. Like, what is the point of this exercise?
The point of this – your question is what's –
Because it's an interesting question, but it's not like the two things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah. Well, my point in the end is – I think there is a lot of joy in Buckeyeville today about Greg Schiano staying. And I'm trying to put in context, how big of a deal is it really that Greg Schiano stayed? Because you absolutely have to assume, now this is really it. He's staying for one more year. It's not a long-term solution. He's going to leave when he gets a head coaching job. He just somehow decided that he's better off getting a head coaching job as the defensive coordinator at Ohio State as opposed to the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. How big of a deal is this? Because I think the reaction in the moment is, oh my gosh, Schiano stayed. It's a miracle. And I think that's a little too much. Like, it's nice.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to figure out, so the heart of my question is, is this a national championship kind of move for Ohio State to retain Greg Schiano? Is that how big of a deal this is? Or, you know what? They already got Grinch in the house. They probably would have been fine. It helps with recruiting, whatever. But it wouldn't have been the end of the world to lose him. Again, we're talking about a guy who's a former NFL head coach and a former college football head coach who's now a coordinator in college. So what I'm trying to do, Bill, with most of what I try to do, is answer a basic question in a more interesting way.
Yeah.
The basic question is, how big of a deal is it that Schiano stayed? Because I think there's some level of overreaction to it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right. I think there is a little bit of overreaction. But it is a big deal. I don't know. And I'm not an expert on every coach in the country, but Greg Schiano is probably a top 10 defensive coordinator in college football. I feel pretty confident saying that. The last time Ohio State won a national championship, we're not that far removed from that, was in 2014 when they had co-coordinators, both of whom were overqualified, could have been sole coordinators anywhere, and did a really good job of working together and put together a really good defense, Luke Fickell and Chris Ash. So I think you have to have compatibility, obviously, and Ash and Fickell had that, and we can assume that Schiano and Grinch would, but we don't know that for a fact. But I do think if you can have two guys working in unison, you have two really smart football coaches coordinating your defense. And if Greg Schiano was willing to listen to a little bit of what Grinch wants to bring to the table and they can kind of blend ideas, I think it is a good thing for Ohio State. This is a very obvious thing to say. I think it's better than if he would have left. Then you would have had to bring in, yeah.
Yeah, but is it better than getting NPF? See, that's why I did it.
Right.
See, if the choice is what's better, having him or not having him, of course it's better to have him. That's no discussion.
Yeah, but I'm confused by the NPF part of it still.
Because it was...
But the end result is, I think it is a pretty... It's a fairly... It's a big deal for Ohio State. One, because I think one thing Greg Schiano did show us in this 2018 cycle is that he's a really good recruiter. And I know that that doesn't hold a lot of weight if you assume he's not going to be here next year. But when he was recruiting these kids, and the reports are the reports, whatever, and Greg Schiano can refute them, I think there was some validity to the fact that he was at least thinking of leaving Ohio State.
Oh, 100%
validity. He was recruiting these kids with an uncertain future at Ohio State, and it didn't seem to matter. He'll be recruiting kids in 2019 with an uncertain future at Ohio State, and I don't think it'll matter. So that's to Ohio State's benefit.
Do you think they would have gotten Petit Frere if he would have left? Because now this – see, also, I'm not just randomly picking two names and saying who's more important, this guy or that guy. Tell the little backstory about Schiano and NPF.
When Greg Schiano was fired by the Buccaneers, he was in Tampa – was it for 2 years, I think? He got fired.
The Bucs? Yeah.
He got fired in 2013, and he didn't come to Ohio State until 2016, right? So however long in the interim between getting fired by the Bucs and coming to Columbus, he was still living in Tampa. His sons were at Berkeley Prep, where NPF played. So Greg Schiano was a volunteer. He was a volunteer defensive line coach. Nick Petit Frere played both ways, I think, at Berkeley Prep. So he might have actually had some hands-on coaching with him. At the very least, they had a personal relationship. To the point where Greg Schiano even said on Wednesday that he thinks, to some extent, the fact that Petit Frere knows the Schianos helped a little bit in this recruitment.
Oh, I think he underplayed that because he didn't want to make it sound like, yeah, we got the guy that I was the high school coach for. But
yeah,
they got the guy that he was the high school coach for.
Yeah, he also said later that he like cares about him deeply, like on a personal level, cares about the kid deeply. So yeah, it's more than like an acquaintance. I think they have a pretty solid personal relationship.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just were you? So in the end, we'll wrap up Schiano because you guys like recruiting. You want us to get to recruiting. What was your final takeaway from this whole Patriots dalliance between? For Greg Schiano, and that he walked in today and said, like, I have laser focus on my current job. I don't like to talk about other jobs. What's your whole final evaluation of what probably transpired over the last couple days?
You know, I don't actually know if I have a real, real strong read on it. I thought it was an interesting decision in the first place that Schiano was even on the Patriots' radar.
You put him on the radar.
No, I know.
You got him the job, and then he turned it down.
But it's not like Greg Schiano coordinated the best defense in college football. Like, it's the Patriots. It's not pick any other team in the NFL. It's like the best football franchise in the history of football.
Yeah, I know.
And they wanted Greg Schiano. Which
goes back to my point about this thing. How big of a deal is it that they kept him? How good was the defense this year?
It could have been better.
Oh, yeah, it could have been. Okay.
Yeah.
See, now we're going back to my question, which you disparaged.
No.
And in the end,
I wasn't disparaging it. I was just confused.
The Pavers Conference has reignited here, by the way. Yeah. I think it's Pavers Cocktail Hour.
Something like that. Well, it is happy hour. It's fine. You're saying it's 5 o'clock somewhere? It's 5 o'clock here right now.
It's five o'clock
on National Signing Day. Do you know where your recruit is?
What were we talking about?
I don't know. What happened with the Patriots?
Oh, I don't know. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on with the Patriots because, like, Josh McDaniels was supposed to leave, and now he's back, and, like, now, like, Bill Belichick's his guru. There's some weird things happening there. I think he was genuinely interested. I think the Patriots were interested in it. Just, I don't know, maybe he got cold feet at the last minute. Because it is, like, he doesn't have to go to the NFL to be a head coach. And I know I said before that would make some sense to me, but I think he's just as likely to get a head coaching job being defensive coordinator at Ohio State as he is being defensive coordinator of the Patriots. So maybe he just felt like as surveying the land, he didn't want to move his family. I don't know. He moved his family from Tampa to Columbus 2 years ago. The money was probably the same. He's going to get a raise. He's going to be making $1 million here at Ohio State.
$1 million man.
So in the end, maybe like the hassle of doing it just wasn't worth it.
I will admit, you know, when the reports came out 2 days ago, I was kind of thinking, you know, good is gone. Admittedly, kind of the same thing when the Tennessee stuff came out. Everybody thought he was gone twice and then came back twice, which I think, which again, it for it to happen once is a massive upset. For it to happen twice, I don't even know what you would call it other than
just a massive upset.
Yes, it's like it would be a 16 beating a 1 the NCAA tournament, essentially. But again, I don't think, even though the defense wasn't as good last year, it has been than it has been for several years. Continuity, I think, is important. And again, like I said before, you're already bringing in a new guy in Alex Grinch, who we still don't know what his role is going to be. But to have a guy in Shiano's established running the defense makes that transition a little easier. Instead of throwing a guy who coached in the Northwest for the last three seasons, you bring him in, and all of a sudden he has full control of the defense, where he really doesn't have that full grasp on the personnel that Shiano already does.
They were number 9 in total defense and number 15 in scoring defense last year, by the way. They weren't awful.
No. They weren't awful, except one game.
I mean, they gave up 55 to Iowa,
who only just 48 on defense.
Who just learned what offensive football was the week before that.
Yeah, and they got sliced and diced by Baker Mayfield, but lots of people got sliced and diced by Baker Mayfield.
Georgia did.
I don't know. I think there's some overreaction to it, but coaches matter. Coaches matter, and I think coaches matter a lot to Urban Meyer. And you know, as with all this stuff, it would have mattered who the replacement was. They would have gotten a good replacement. But if they would have hired a bad replacement, then they really, really would have missed him. So I'm a little peeved by the whole thing, because, I mean, people don't make stuff up. Reporters don't make stuff up.
Yeah.
People tell them stuff. Somebody with some knowledge told somebody something. And people and teams use the media all the time to leak stuff. And then stuff gets leaked, and then it turns out it doesn't happen. And everybody's like, well, I certainly wish people didn't jump to... Stop. Stop. You've done it. Mm-hmm. You've used the media. You've leaked things. So, like, I hate to, like, get up at a news conference and just be, like, outraged about how the modern media landscape works and that all these things get... I just have block. All I worry is stop. All I worry about is my job. I don't even know where New England is. The Patriots, were they in the Super Bowl this year? Bill, what's their coach's name? Never met the guy. Come on. You thought you might work for the Patriots, and then guess what? It's like, well, I just want to stay here for my family. Yeah, and guess what else? A raise.
I was going to say.
You turning down the raise? Are you turning down the? You got $48 million from the Buccaneers to not coach them, but yet you wanted Ohio State had to give you an extra couple hundred thousand to get you to stay here. So I mean, let's just call it what it is. You thought hard about going to the Patriots. Some people who talked to the media thought you were going to the Patriots. I don't know if you changed your mind necessarily, but you certainly considered it. And then Ohio State sweetened the pot and got you to stay. It's just how it works, but don't stand up in front of us and act like it's an outrage that, like, where did this come from, and I don't worry about that kind of stuff. Yeah, you do. You're a coach. All coaches worry about that kind of stuff. So it just bothers me. Everybody plays the game. You play the anonymous source game. Oh, tell all the national guys this and that and the other, and then you come here in front of the local guys, and it's like you're going to stand up at the press conference and like have it be a fairyland.
Yeah.
I just hate that. I hate it. Can't we just be real? I hate it when Hugh Jackson does it, and I hate it when college coaches do it. Why do we have to play games and act stupid? So he almost went to the Patriots, and he didn't. And it's good for them, but it's not as good as NPF. So let's move on to recruiting. They finished with the number 2 class. They didn't get number 1. Georgia finished number 1, and we'll get into that because we like to take credit here at mm-hmm. Buckeye Talk for the resurgence of Georgia recruiting. We motivated them by mocking them. We led them to how to get it done in Georgia. We explained, and I think they took this to heart. Here's a strategy in Georgia. There are good players in Georgia. Get them to go to Georgia. Effective. Effective.
Seems to have worked.
Effective. So Ohio State, with the number 2 class, we'll have Tim break that down in a second, but I want to hit NPF again. Bill, contextualize this. This guy is the best tackle in the class. Urban Meyer made that clear, that he was their priority over Jackson Carmen, which is
also not true.
A beautiful thing to say, since he's the guy you got. You know what? You know, an interesting thing to say sometime? Urban, you didn't get Jackson Carmen. How did NPF fit into that? It's like, actually, we really, really wanted Jackson Carmen.
Yeah.
But we didn't get him, so we took this other guy. That I'm waiting for.
Yeah.
That day when a coach says that I'm waiting for. It's remarkable how often that the guys they really want are exactly the guys they get.
Yep.
What? In fact, it's such a coincidence. It happens with every team in the country every year.
South Carolina is the only program that won at Jadeveon Clowney. That's a fact.
Yeah. No, but we didn't, you know, I mean, like, if he... He might have been a preferred walk-on here.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, we weren't really concerned with him. I mean, we sent 9 coaches to his sister's middle school ballet recital to try to get him to come to our school, but we didn't really want him. NPF, you don't pull 5 stars on signing day all that often.
No.
Now, in terms of big deal stuff, now this is the thing. If you're an Ohio State fan, I would not run screaming into the streets because Greg Schiano stayed. You are allowed to run screaming into the streets because NPF's a Buckeye.
Yeah, I agree with that. So, like, Urban Meyer has a very strong reputation as being a closer in recruiting. But in terms of coming in the signing day, there being a 5-star prospect on the board, you not knowing quite sure where he was going to go, and then Ohio State ultimately getting him, I think this is the second time it's happened. The first time was Von Bell in 2013. There have been other 5-stars, but all those guys were not national signing day commitments. And he is – Nick Petit-Frere is the 3rd highest-rated player Urban Meyer has signed at Ohio State, behind Noah Spence in 2012 and Nick Bosa in 2016.
That's Nick Petit Bosa to you.
Nick Petit Bosa. He's petite. What's the Spanish? What's the French word for bear? He calls himself small bear.
Oh, yeah. Garcon, I think it is.
Oh, okay. I think that's wrong. Yeah, no, this is... It's a major deal, not only because
he is the Petit Bosa, because he's the little
he's
Bosa.
He's the littler Bosa.
I'm gonna start calling him Nicholas Petit Bosa and see what he thinks. Bosa. Will he get mad?
He won't know what the hell you're talking
He'll
about.
He'll have no reaction to it.
Yeah.
I think I just looked it up. The word for bear in French is orge. Like, it's spelled hours like in English, O-U-R-S, and I never took French in high school or college, so I don't know how to pronounce that.
That's awful. That's an awful translation.
Yeah. Be better, France.
Yeah, if it's French and it's bear, it needs to have an X in it.
Yeah.
An X?
Yeah.
X is the coolest letter in the alphabet anyways.
I agree with that, actually.
Man. That's true. Underutilized.
We'll do a Twitter poll.
What was I talking about?
I don't know. Nicholas NPF. How big a deal this is. Von Bell.
Von Bell. It's a Von Bell big deal. He's the 3rd best player Urban has signed here. He's the best offensive lineman Urban has signed here. It's a major position of need in this recruiting class. If you look ahead to, like, 2019, it's not totally clear not only, like, who's going to be the starting tackle, but, like, who on the roster is even a tackle. There are a lot of guards who could be tackles. But you want, like, a no-doubt guy like Nick Petit-Frere, who is left tackle, right tackle, whatever. He's a starter in the future. And they had to solidify that. They only had Max Ray in this class, and they needed more than one tackle. And they didn't just get one tackle. They got the best tackle in the country. So it's huge.
And if you watch his highlight film like I did yesterday, you're just going to see pancake after pancake after pancake.
He's a mean dude.
Is he, like, the highest-rated tackle they've signed since Orlando Pace?
I mean, I don't know that for a fact.
Let's make it a fact.
I'm trying to think of the last 5-star tackle they signed was
Mike
probably
Adams.
Mike Adams back in 2008.
Oh, yeah. He was, like, the number one player in the country, wasn't he? Mike Adams?
It was in the neighborhood. I know Pryor was number 2 that year. Adams was a 5. I think he was a 5.
He wasn't. He was the number 1 tackle, though.
Yeah, he was a 5.
Right, yeah.
Michael Brewster is a 5. I think
Brew Crew.
Oh, yeah, Brew Crew.
Okay. So it's a big deal. It's a big deal, and tackle is one of those positions. And Isaiah Prince wasn't a 5-star, but he was a guy who was a signing day flip.
Petit-Frere is ranked higher than Mike Adams, rated higher than Mike Adams.
Really? Okay.
If you go by the individual composite score, Petit-Frere is .9963, and Adams is .9887.
Wow. Okay. Isaiah Prince was a 4-star when he flipped to Ohio State on signing day 3 years ago. And it's like, oh, wow, that's like a... He has saved them Like, and we've talked and written about this. Isaiah Prince has saved this offensive line the last couple of years. Like, remember that year when Isaiah Prince was starting at right tackle and, like, wasn't very good? You know what? Anybody else would have been worse, because obviously that's the case because Isaiah Prince beat them out. He saved them and started as a true sophomore when he shouldn't have had to. He started last year as a junior and played much, much better, played well. And now he's a senior this year. And what did Max Ray tell you, Bill?
He said, quote, Zay is solid at left tackle.
They call him Zay?
He called him Zay. I don't know. Maybe they're joking around with him. Like, hey, Max, call him Zay. Everyone calls him Zay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then he does it, and then Isaiah Prince gives him a swirly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's where they are. So we had projected Isaiah Prince as a left tackle because it made sense, but it sounds like that actually is the case, and he's locked that down, and he's going to be your starting left tackle this year.
Yeah.
And then guess what might happen? Nicholas Petit-Ferrer might be your left.
That would be
I decided
right.
I don't like left. I don't like NPF. I'm already out on it. Doesn't roll off the tongue.
You're French. Pronounce it like the way the Frenchman would.
I'm going to offend French people if I do my French accent. Then Nicholas Petit-Ferrer is going to be your left tackle for maybe for the 2 years after that. That would not at all be surprising at all if Isaiah Prince is the left tackle in 2018 as a senior, and in 2019, that's who steps in as a sophomore and junior for 2 years.
The only obvious tackle in waiting is Thayer Munford, who might start next year. He might not. But everyone else, like I said, like there's Brandon Bowen, who's maybe a guard, maybe a tackle. Like there's nothing certain at tackle other than Isaiah Prince, Thayer Munford, and Nick Petit-Ferrer. And even Max Ray is rated as a tackle. He wants to be a tackle. I think it's possible he plays guard.
And again, another guy, this wasn't a signing day thing, but Jamarco Jones, during his commitment, late in his commitment, was flirting with Michigan State. And people were worried that maybe Ohio State was going to lose him to Michigan State. They didn't. He came here, and guess what? He was really, really good. Mm-hmm. He was a really, really good starting left tackle for 2 years, and that's really, really important. So, obviously, and we're going to get into the class matters. The class matters, of course. You want depth in your class. You want elite guys at the top and a good, solid middle of a bunch of four stars and maybe some Ohio three stars at the bottom that you can develop and that kind of thing. The class is what matters. But I do think it's very easy sometimes to go through and say, well, this is a really good class, whatever, but wow, that guy, they really needed that guy. Mm-hmm. And this is a really good class, but man, that guy, they really needed that guy. And I think, and Urban Meyer talked about it, and again, Bill wrote a big story on this, but I think this guy in this spot, after losing Jackson Carman, he's the number one tackle in the country. Urban Meyer said, we absolutely needed a tackle. You look through this whole 26-person class and you say, this is a really good class. This is the number two class in the country. But I think you look through and you say that guy and you point to Petit-Ferrer and he can be one of those guys that because he's here, this happened and it's really good. Like, for instance, him being a two-year starter at left tackle mm-hmm. and then going to be a first-round draft pick. And if he wasn't here, it would have been noticeable because then maybe all of a sudden you're trying to figure things out at a very important spot, and you don't have an obvious answer.
It felt like on December 20th, the early signing period, that Ohio State signed 21 players, and they're really happy about that, and their class even on that day ended as the number two class in the country, and there was some feeling like they had lost the day because they lost Jackson Carman, who was in state. He was a five-star, but he was a position of need, and they like flipped the script today on Wednesday on the regular signing period. They gained a player that I don't think even 5 days ago really anyone thought they had a shot at getting. I don't think you can overstate how big of a deal it is to get a guy like that and more importantly close with a guy like that.
Okay, before we go to the class, Bill, I just want you, for people who are maybe using this podcast as a primary source of recruiting information that you haven't read all 25 stories on our site. Again, they had 21 guys signed and locked.
Well, apparently it was 22.
What's the deal?
I don't know. So it was for sure 21, and then, like, I did not think Tyreek Smith signed. But today I very much got the vibe that he did sign, like, secretly before he committed on January 4th.
But he didn't want anyone to know because he wanted to announce on the All-Star game?
Yes, which is not, like, Jason Owe, who committed to Penn State, did the same thing.
He was signed, too, secretly?
Yeah, but the difference was when he committed on January 4th, like, Penn State went nuts and tweeted out graphics of him, and Ohio State didn't do that when Tyreek Smith committed. Like, if a guy is signed, if Tyreek Smith signed on December 20th and committed on January 4th, when he committed on January 4th, Ohio State can use his name and likeness now without it being a violation because he signed. But they didn't do that when he committed, which is part of the reason why I thought he hadn't signed. He also said at the Under Armour All-American game at a video I was watching that he didn't sign. But apparently he did. Doesn't matter. It's like semantics. But I guess we should say that they technically signed 22 on December 20th and then signed four more guys on February, 7th.
Okay, so tell us then, who are the four? Besides Petit Frere, there's three others.
Three others. Tyler Friday, four-star defensive end from New Jersey, who committed in January. Chris Olave, a four-star receiver from California, who committed in January. Petit Frere, who committed on signing day. And then the last guy is Javante, and this is how Greg Schiano pronounced it, Javante Jean-Baptiste, not Jean-Baptiste. They got two French guys today. Javante Jean-Baptiste is a four-star defensive end, they have him listed as, from New Jersey. He played like a 3-4 linebacker / defensive end in high school, but he will be a defensive end at Ohio State.
Okay. So that's your group, and again, the other guys you already know about. This is the weird thing about this signing day. Again, as you guys know this now, this is the first year of this. They moved up, had an early signing day in December. Normally, this is an explosion today. This is the only signing day. This is the day, the first time that Urban Meyer and these coaches can talk about any of these guys, the first time that people get locked in. That's not the case. They had 22, as it turned out, already locked. They locked in four more today. But in the end, what they did not do is lock in the number one overall class. Tim Bielik has been tracking this. He's been writing about this. He wrote about it in December. He wrote about it more today. Give the good people a final breakdown of the overall class rankings. And we use 247sports.com because they have a composite ranking that brings in all the different recruiting services and rankings. And where did Ohio State finish, Tim?
Ohio State finished where they started it. Where they were at the end of the early signing period, number two to Georgia. And when you look at Ohio State's class, yeah, you could say, you know, Ohio State, they want to be number one, and it's not good being number one. You know what? This Georgia class, we're not going to talk about Georgia too much necessarily. This is a legendary class. Could be like among the best on paper we've ever seen. 7 5-stars. So to be second to that, considering, you know, Ohio State, 23 of the 26 players are 4 stars or better. Not a bad place to be in. The gulf between number one and number two is not pretty big. It's 6 points, about exactly 6.25 points.
This is in the 247 rating system. Yeah.
And then the gulf between two and three is extremely sizable because number three is Texas, and Ohio State has almost a 17-point lead on number three. So it's pretty much clearly a top two and then everybody else out there.
So again, Georgia had 26 total commits, Ohio State 26 total commits, Texas 27 total commits. I know some of the recruiting guys were talking, depending how things went for Texas, maybe they could have jumped to number one. But Georgia, this class, as Tim said, 7 5-stars, 15 4-stars. Ohio State's class is 3 5-stars and 20 4-stars. And I know there's something about, like, how much does it matter that, like, they didn't finish number one and they finished number two? It doesn't matter at all. It's not the Olympics. They don't get a medal for it. I mean, you get your players are the players. So you want as many good players as you can get. And, like, we always say, and Urban Meyer always says, like, oh, it, you know, if people are ranking things or if you can compete for something, we want to win it. It there's no trophy. I mean, it doesn't like, you want your class to be the best it can be, but, like, if you finish half a point ahead of Georgia or half a point behind Georgia, it's like, what does that mean? It's like, it means nothing. Of course it means nothing. It's imaginary. What is this? It matters if you're second or ninth. Mm-hmm. It matters if you're 13th or 43rd. But, like,
I think it matters also if you were a distant second, but they're not.
Yeah, but I mean, like, there's what, but also, like, what Georgia did. I mean, Georgia, like, passed them because, like, I mean, Ohio State signed a 5-star on signing day, and Georgia still beat them. So it's like, I don't know. So Let's do our quick, and Tim can bring this up, before we get back into Ohio State, and we'll run through the overall rankings and do some other stuff. But hit Georgia, Tim.
Okay.
We have become, other than Ohio State recruiting, we have talked more about Georgia recruiting over the history of Buckeye talk than any other school. More than we talk Michigan recruiting, more than we talk Penn State recruiting, for whatever reason. I don't know why. It's because you guys went to Georgia one time. You and Ari drove through the state of Georgia, so we became Georgia recruiting experts.
I wrote a Georgia hit piece, upset many in Dog Nation.
Did you?
Oh yeah, that was like I don't get a lot of
hate mail
or hate tweets because I'm a very pleasant person.
I'll start sending you some.
I had to block. Hey, I had to block someone on Twitter the other day.
Hey, Bill Landis, I heard you had a problem with my question at the start of Buckeye Talk. You blocked someone the other day?
Yeah.
F bombs?
No, I just didn't like the way they were talking to me.
Smart mouth, just in general, huh?
Yeah.
That attitude?
Yeah. Like, I don't, like, if you want to disagree with me, that's fine, but don't yell at me. And, like, whatever, you can scream into the void, I don't have to look at it, so I blocked them.
Twitter's free.
Yeah.
Twitter's free, so.
I have my problem is I have my DMs open, which I like, because every now and then people, like, ask me questions, and I don't get to all of them, but I get some of them, and I enjoy it. But it also leaves the door open for people who like to scream at you.
They were screaming at you in your DMs?
Yeah, I was about. Remember the basketball podcast we did where like we opened by saying that we're going to get upset by a 13 seed?
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of, and I'll probably unblock. I do this sometimes. I'll block somebody and then like I'll remember it and I'll look like, oh, I don't want to block anybody and I'll unblock them. So if you're listening, I will unblock you at some point. But he said something along the lines of like, can't believe you guys opened the podcast and you're going to lose to a 13 seed. I better not see you guys talking about how fans don't show up and you're spewing this crap or something like that. And I was like, I don't really want to listen to this right now.
But also, and I think you've made this point before, I said that.
Yeah.
And you got yelled at for it.
Yeah. You didn't get yelled at for it.
No.
I got yelled at for it multiple times, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
You know why? My DMs are locked tight. You can't get into my DMs.
Who was I talking to?
I don't want anyone sliding into my DMs.
I was talking to somebody. Somebody said to me, I forget who it was the other day, like, does Doug have his DMs open? I was like, oh, no, he can't do that.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. To be honest, I don't want you in there, and you don't want to be in there.
Yeah.
That is not a pleasant – you don't want to be in my DMs.
Yeah.
That is not a place for a normal person. But I apologize for having someone yell at you. But I think I prefaced it by saying, I know it's a ridiculous thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway.
Maybe he was just yelling at you through me.
Again, which has happened before.
Sure. That's fine. It happens.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to open –
I'm going to unblock them right now as we're talking about it.
I'm going to open my DMs for like 10 minutes, and then you can slide into my DMs and yell at me. For all the times that I've made you get yelled at, and then
I'm gonna
close them back up.
I'm going to tweet to the world that the DMs are open. So that like, there's a 10-minute window, Doug's DMs are open, go yell at them.
That would be great, yeah. I really don't even understand social media still. But yeah, I would never open my DMs.
I have some people blocked, like I think I have like two or three blocked for like racist stuff, and then the rest are like porn bots are blocked. Because things that like tweet random things at you, but I think that might be the only person I blocked because they annoyed me one time. So I apologize. I'll unblock you now. Feel free to yell at me again if you want to.
Okay.
You know.
Oh, the Georgia thing. Yeah. That was a good. If the tangent's so good that you have no idea what you were talking about when it started, that's a good tangent.
That's why I'm here to remember, just in case.
You need to track the tangents.
Because I know you guys were on your Twitter thing, and I'm like looking at Georgia right now.
So you wrote a – but I feel like that your piece on Georgia – and again, this was when
– this was like after the 2014 title game. Yeah.
So in January of 2015, I feel like your piece is probably like hanging in the office of the Georgia athletic director.
I hope so.
And it's why Mark Richt got fired, and it's why they hired Kirby Smart, and it's why Georgia made the playoff. And it's why Georgia almost won the national championship. And it's why Georgia has the #1 recruiting class in the country. And it's because of one person, Mr. Bill Landis.
I think it's also the last thing Kirby Smart reads before he gets on that helicopter every time he goes to visit somebody.
Yeah.
Pumps himself up.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you have your pump-up music at the gym. He has your piece before he goes in that chopper.
I like that. I can handle
people
that.
People of Dog Nation should thank you. So just explain this a little bit. So for the people who maybe have not been listening to Buckeye Talk for 3 years and have no idea why we are talking about Georgia recruiting.
So the premise was, I'm going to try to look it up while I'm talking about it because I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but it was, the premise was, and the headline was, why Georgia is a southern state worth attacking for Ohio State? Because if you think about it, Like, they, Ohio State doesn't recruit in Alabama because those kids are probably going to Alabama or Auburn. Or they don't recruit LSU cause, or Louisiana because all those kids are going to LSU. They recruit in Florida because there are a million kids in Florida and the Florida schools can't take all of them. But, like, Georgia has very talented players and a program in the University of Georgia that should be able to take those top players. And like you said earlier, Doug, they weren't doing it. And it was, like, kind of an alarming rate at which they weren't keeping the five stars in state. And, like, the crux of the story for Ohio State was Raekwon McMillan and Von Bell. We had gone down there and talked to a kid named Venzel Bulware, who was not a five-star, not among the top players in Georgia, but he just kind of highlighted the fact that he was considering Ohio State. He ended up going to Tennessee, I believe. And there was a very funny picture of him on Twitter of him in a Tennessee hoodie standing next to Mark Richt, like looking away from Mark Richt, like with his eyes rolled, like he wanted nothing to do with Mark Richt being there. And like Mark Richt looked totally uncomfortable too, because he knew he was like just, he was there to recruit a kid who had no interest in Georgia. And I thought that picture was very funny and kind of telling. And then I asked Venzel Bulware about it. And like, I asked why do you feel this way about Georgia and why do Georgia kids not want to go to the University of Georgia? And he said, you just get used to seeing the top kids leave, which like if a kid in Ohio said that, people would be going nuts. I think if any kid in Ohio said that, regardless of how he was ranked, people would be going nuts. So that was the crux of the story. And obviously it's changed now because of all the top Georgia guys they have. But there was a time in Mark Richt's tenure where the top players in Georgia, not all of them, because they got some of them, but a lot of them like felt no allegiance to the home state program. And I thought that was an interesting time for that program.
It was more that like Georgia with the Georgia kids was like in the mix, just like they were another random out-of-state school. They weren't dominating their state like the home state university should dominate it.
Right.
It would be like if Ohio State, if you looked at the best Ohio kids and it was like, some go to Ohio State, some go to Michigan, some go to Michigan State, some go to Penn State. It's a big mix. It's like, no, it's not like that. When you look at the very best Ohio kids, the most of them go to Ohio State. So now, Tim, as we are looking at Georgia, and we're not going to make this a Georgia podcast, but we are talking about this because it's been something we've talked about in the past, and now I think we had, in trying to place Ohio State in the national landscape, and we've talked about this before, Alabama was number one, and for a while Ohio State was leading the chase pack, right? Alabama's in front, and Ohio State's in front of the guys who are chasing. And at the moment, you wouldn't say that. You would say Clemson leads the pack of who's chasing Alabama. And now Georgia, after reaching the national title game, after winning the SEC, and now recruiting at this level, Georgia has jumped up to a spot where when you think about, I think at the moment, the best programs in college football, to me, you think of four. And I don't quite put Oklahoma there because I think the overall recruiting is not there, even though they made the playoff last year. They beat Ohio State last year. They're predicted to be in the top five again next year. They have a lot of guys back. I think they need to show that in recruiting, and Lincoln Riley's new or whatever. But to me, you look at a top four. And maybe Texas will get there, but they're not there yet with the on-field performance. But because Georgia has thrust its way into the top four. Does that make sense? I mean, yeah. Do you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I do.
Absolutely.
The totality of where things are as a program, Georgia has thrust its way into the top four, and that matters for Ohio State. Because guess what? It mattered for Ohio State this year because Ohio State didn't get in to the playoff because the SEC got two. And the SEC got two because Bama's always there. And guess what? Georgia, all of a sudden, in the opposite division in the East, became a kind of team that was worthy of making the playoff. And the East in the SEC has not had a playoff-worthy team since Urban Meyer left. So right. Now, all of a sudden, if you have two programs in the SEC in opposite divisions that are both among the elite in college football, that matters for Ohio State. So that is a long explanation of why we're talking about Georgia. And I just want you guys to hear this. I want you to hear the kind of players they got when we're talking about a class that has 7 5 stars in it and where they came from. Tim, just run through the top guys and give us little explainers about who they are, what position they play, and where they're from.
I'll start with the early enrollees. Start at the top, Justin Fields, number two player in the country, dual threat quarterback. He was number two to Trevor Lawrence, who's also an in-state kid who's going to Clemson. Georgia went with the dual threat guy, so he's going there. Penn State commit.
Former Penn State commit, who was like the jewel of Penn State's class for a tiny little bit.
Yep.
There was a time when Ohio State had Emory Jones, another quarterback from Georgia, and Penn State had Justin Fields, And neither Ohio State nor Penn State ended up with those guys, but Justin Fields decided to go to Georgia, even though Georgia just made the national championship game with a freshman quarterback. That's how good Georgia's recruiting right now.
Then you got Zamir White, number 9 player in the country, top running back from
Ohio State. Wanted him.
Ohio State target, yeah. Cade Mays, 5-star offensive tackle, top prospect in Tennessee, already 318 pounds.
Ohio State wanted him too.
Brendan Cox, Ohio State had him until about 2 weeks before signing day. 5-star defensive end, also from Georgia. And then the guys who have signed and unrolled. Jamari Sawyer, top 10 in the country, 342-pound offensive guard, 5 stars.
From Georgia.
Today, they got Tyson Campbell, 5-star cornerback, teammate of Patrick Surtain, who's headed to Alabama. Those two are probably going to go head-to-head a few times in some SEC title games down the road. Adam Anderson, number 18 overall, 5-star linebacker from Georgia, number 4 prospect in the state of Georgia. So that's number 2, number 3, and number 4, and number 5 in Georgia going to Georgia.
And the only guy, the number 1 guy is the guy who's the number 1 player in the country, Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback going to Clemson. But yep. Again, Georgia, the state, this is how good Georgia talent is.
Exactly.
This is how good Georgia talent is. They have the 2 best players in the country are 2 quarterbacks from Georgia. Mm-hmm. And Georgia got one of them. In a time where I think a couple years ago, Justin Fields might have wound up at Penn State. I think a couple years ago, yep. Brenton Cox would have wound up at Ohio State. So that's all this stuff is connected when you are recruiting at an elite level. We talk about Georgia a little bit because Georgia matters to Ohio State. When you're competing against the best of the best, and actually, there's a question I think that I got, Bill. I don't know. I actually have my phone. I can look too. It's an interesting way to think about it. Someone asked about the idea of, like, who are Ohio State's main rivals in recruiting? And, like, obviously, do you have it?
Yeah, I found it from Sam Faulkner at
Sam. Oh, boy, Sam. Okay. Go ahead and read it, Tim.
He asks us, who is our biggest competition for the recruits we want? The easy answer seems to be Bama because of their dominance, but it looks like we're losing more head-to-head recruiting battles to Georgia, Penn State, and the Florida schools. Has Urban given up on recruiting against Saban?
No.
No.
It didn't really work out that, like, Saban wanted Emory Jones for a while. Saban wanted Brenton Cox. Like, if you're going to recruit elite players in the South, you're going to run into Nick Saban. So he's not avoiding recruiting him. It's cyclical a little bit. Like, I would say maybe it was Florida State for a while. Florida State got Marvin Wilson. Florida State got Cam Akers. Florida State got, who was the defensive end? Josh Sweat. So that was like a 2 or 3 year period where there were some really high priority Ohio State targets.
LaMarcus Joyner,
who went to Florida State. But I would say, I wouldn't say it's Penn State, to be totally honest. I know they were in on Rashid Walker, and Rashid Walker picked Penn State on Wednesday, but there have not been a ton of Urban Meyer versus James Franklin head-to-head recruiting battles.
OA, which you covered.
OA, yeah, and Tyreek, there were in this class.
Right.
In this class there were, but this was the first time it's happened.
And it wasn't like there were 10 of them.
Yeah, it was, because I wouldn't even really consider Micah Parsons one. That was very weird. But it was OA, it was Tyreek Smith. Penn State got OA. Ohio State got Smith. That's a wash, in my opinion. Tyreek Smith actually is better, or at least higher ranked.
This shorter kid, and I just did like a brief thing about Penn State Michigan recruiting, which is why I suddenly know the name of a recruit.
Nice.
But he's the number 1 receiver in the country. Is it Justin Shorter from New Jersey? Mm-hmm. Was Ohio State ever interested in him?
It doesn't seem maybe, like he maybe had an at offer. Some point, but it was not down the line, like toward the end of the cycle. No.
It's interesting how stuff goes, but it's like, hey, there's a receiver from New Jersey who's the number 1 receiver in the country. We've written and talked about Ohio State's New Jersey recruiting in the past, but it seemed like Penn State got in on that kid and got him, and there wasn't a lot of Ohio State interest necessarily.
But there's like all those names that Tim rattled off in Georgia's class this year, the 7 5-stars they have, 6 of them were high-priority Ohio State targets, and one of them was Brenton Cox, who was once a commit, like you said. So I think – I don't know if there's one true recruiting rival. I think it changes year to year, but I would say – without a doubt, this year it was Georgia.
And I'm going to throw out a theory that I think pretty soon Georgia, in the way Kirby Smart's recruiting right now, could soon surpass Bama. This is the Bama model, but you're doing it in a state in Georgia that is up there with Florida, with Ohio, and Texas, with California, as far as talent goes. So this is like Alabama plus recruiting that Georgia's doing. And when you're able to keep the top guys in your state, and we've seen Ohio State do that for so long – it eventually weakens out you know, the other programs that are around you, because Alabama's gotten Georgia guys in the past. Auburn's gotten Georgia guys. Florida gets Georgia guys. Ohio State gets Georgia guys. Those guys are now gone. They're all staying in state and going to Georgia. That creates a tidal wave of talent that's all going in the same spot. And now you have a massive challenger to Alabama and a program that very soon could surpass Alabama.
Yeah, like the worst thing, there's probably like 10 college football coaches who, when Mark Richt got fired, were like, crap.
Yeah. It's not. Just about the Saban point real quick. Saban won it, Petit Frere. Saban won it, Tyler Friday, and didn't get either of them.
The other school is Clemson, and I think we want to touch on Clemson because we talked about it a lot when they got Jackson Carmen, mm-hmm. came into Ohio, and got that the top player in Ohio. Clemson's class is ranked fourth. Is that right, Tim? It goes Georgia, Ohio State, Texas. Oh, it's sixth.
This is just updated a few minutes ago. It's 5:59. It was updated after a kid named Isaac Taylor Stewart committed to USC. So okay. Clemson fell out of the top five, but they're at number six with only 17 commits.
So
five stars.
Clemson got five stars, only 17 commits. Wow. So again, it's Georgia 1, Ohio State 2, Texas 3, USC 4, Penn State 5, which is like a huge deal for Penn State. Penn State is like back. This is mm-hmm. like Penn State, what they've done on the field against Ohio State, that they should have been in the playoff a couple years ago. Like, you could tell Penn State was back. Penn State's back when they do this. When you have recruiting rankings and there's a second Midwestern, Eastern school in there, and it's not just Bama, Clemson, Texas, Georgia, mm-hmm. that is a huge thing to have Penn State there. So again, Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, USC, Penn State. That's your top five. Clemson 6, Alabama 7. But Clemson, with their 17 commits, they got the top player in Ohio, the top player in Georgia, Trevor Lawrence, the overall number one player, the top player in Florida, the top player in North Carolina, and the top player in South Carolina. So they went into three of the most talent-rich states in Ohio, Georgia, and Florida and got the best kid from those states. So they're not going to win. You're not going to win a recruiting title when you only have 17 kids in your class. But Clemson had a bunch of guys turn down the NFL. If you think a bunch of Ohio State guys turned down the NFL, there was some even better talent at Clemson that turned down the NFL. Mm-hmm. And they brought in a class like this. Like what Clemson is doing, like Clemson is going nowhere.
I agree. They're not going anywhere. And it's interesting they only have 17. I don't know what their scholarship situation is. And I wonder if there's even some strategy there. Like, Urban signed 26. Urban didn't have to sign 26, but he did because he could. I wonder if Dabo could, but maybe he didn't want to. And, like, was a little more pragmatic about it, got his five stars, and then filled in with some other guys and ended up with 17. Then he's content with that.
Well, when consider the fact that, like you mentioned, Doug, they got guys back. Their defensive line's coming back. And I mentioned, I think it was on the podcast a while ago, that Clemson essentially has an NFL defensive line coming back for 2018. So they've definitely in limited spots. The quality over quantity approach definitely speaks to it. And one guy you didn't mention, they got the top player in the state of Alabama, which almost never happens.
Oh, right.
In Justin Ross, a receiver from, I believe it's called Phoenix City, Alabama.
I've been there. It's right on the Georgia border.
And it is it kind of encapsulates the weirdness of this recruiting year compared to some of the others, in that you expect the top player in Alabama to go to Alabama or potentially Auburn, not to leave the state entirely and go to Clemson. It almost proves a guy like Dabo Swinney is the wants and essentially get whoever he wants.
Let's do a quick numbers crunch.
Mm-hmm.
We like to always keep people honest on the numbers. Again, Ohio State only lost three guys to the NFL. They probably thought they were going to lose five or six. As far as we know right now, where do they stand on numbers?
89.
So 85 scholarship limit with the guys, with 26 guys coming in, they're at 89 total. Mm-hmm. That means we need four players off the current roster before camp in August. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a player out there who's a very likely candidate who hasn't played in a while, who would be a medical hardship case, which is you keep your scholarship, you stay at Ohio State, you get your education paid for, but you can't play football anymore for medical reasons, and then you no longer count against the 85 scholarship limit. That would be a very logical one that would not be any funny business. Joe Burrow is a player that has expressed openly the possibility of transferring. Again, if he does not win the job in the spring, I think we all are thinking that Joe Burrow is too good to sit here.
Yeah.
Because he can go start somewhere else. That would get you to 87. And then you need two more items of player movement, whether it's somebody in this class doesn't quite make it for some reason, or guys on the roster either have medical issues or transfer over playing time. So, again, we always talk about numbers. How do you feel about where they stand with numbers?
I always feel a little weird when there's, like, not an obvious answer. And it's not, again, it's not to suggest that, that Ohio State does things in a shady way. It's just that there are two. There's Burrow and another one that we're just not going to say because I don't think it's fair to speculate about a player's future. But beyond that, there I can't really think of two other ones. So they'll get there and they'll be fine, and I think they'll get there in the right way. But I always feel a little uneasy when it's not obvious to me who those guys are.
And because, again, they've already had a bunch of player movement to get to 89.
Yeah, they've already had a couple transfers.
You know, Kevin Feeder transferred, Jack Wallabaugh transferred. We apologize if there's – listen, here's the thing. So it snowed.
A lot.
It snowed a lot on National Signing Day. And so we didn't want to go back to my house and drive more through traffic and rush hour traffic and snow to do the podcast because we want to get this out to you guys as soon as possible. And we cannot find a place to do it. We didn't want to do it in the car because we were either going to A, freeze, or B, turn on the heater and it would sound weird. So we are in the lobby of the Fawcett Center, which is where like the athletic department offices are like up on the seventh floor or whatever it is. And we can't control our environment. And so we apologize for that. We would like to be in a smaller, cozier room. The only thing we could have done is go in a bathroom stall. But then you get echoes, and also then you're in a bathroom stall.
Yep.
So we apologize for that. We'll be back to normal spot in my basement next week. Doug DeLillo, bringing it. If Ohio State landed Jackson Carman, do they still recruit and get Nicholas Petit-Frere? Who would you rather have? So again, in the moment, it's like, oh my gosh, they locked Jackson Carman. But in the end, could they have? Is there a way they could have gotten both? Or would that just not be realistic? Would they not even tried?
No, they would have tried because they were trying to get two tackles even at the end with Petit-Frere and Rashid Walker. So I think they would have tried. It's probably unrealistic to think they would have been able to land the number one and number two offensive tackles in this class. So I'll say if they would have landed Carman in December, no, they probably would not have landed Petit-Frere today. And I don't like who's better because it like leaves open a door for what we were talking about earlier before we started recording the podcast, which is like, oh, the guy we didn't Jackson Carman's not good because he's the guy we didn't get. Like who, like people were tweeting like Jackson, who like Jackson Carman's really good, dude. And he's going to be really good at Clemson.
And Ohio State wanted him.
And Ohio State wanted him. And Nick Petit-Frere is going to be really good here at Ohio State. But, like, if you want I'm going to give my honest assessment, and it's going to be contradictory to what I just said. I think I might rather have Petit-Frere. I think he might have a higher upside. I think Carmen's probably better now, though Carman has to change his body a little bit to play college. Coming from a fat man, he just weighs too much. He can't weigh 340 pounds or whatever he weighs and play offensive line. And Petit-Frere is 6'6" and 272 pounds and looks like a basketball player. He looks a lot like – he's built like Isaiah Prince. He's just not as tall. So I would take that guy who seems to have a little more upside as probably a better athlete. But Jackson Carman's an animal. And if he has the right approach at Clemson, I have no doubt that he'll be one of the best offensive linemen in the country.
All right, DeLillo, another question because we like DeLillo's questions and also because this is something that we wanted to get into. Is Michigan's recruiting this season a one-time bump or a predictor of the future for the program? Where'd they finish, Tim?
They finished 21, which is just one spot ahead of Nebraska, which really did most of his recruiting in the last 2 months with Scott Frost.
So that was 19 players, no five stars, 7 four stars, 12 three stars. And they lost their top recruit on signing day, who flipped from Michigan to Georgia. Who was that kid?
That would be Otis Reese, a linebacker who's the number 5 outside linebacker, 12th player in the state of Georgia.
And so he would have been, he's the overall 87 player in the country. He would have been the highest ranked player in Michigan's class, and he's like not even a top 10 player in Georgia's class. It was not a good, the people that I respect and follow who cover Michigan saying this was not a good day for Michigan. And their season did not go as they wanted it to go. I think there's a valid point to be made about sometimes you get an early commitment And it's like, listen, so if you're a kid from Georgia and you commit to Michigan because, like, Michigan's cool and you had fun and it's a good school and it's a good program and Jim Harbaugh's a good coach and they have a good coach, and then Michigan has its season. Where'd they go? I mean, what bowl did Michigan go to?
They won
Outback.
Yeah, and they won the Outback Bowl, and I think people remember
they played
that.
South Carolina.
Yeah, I think people remember that game because they blew that lead and were the only Big Ten team to lose a bowl game this offseason.
So they lose the Outback Bowl, and then you're in Georgia, and Georgia plays for the national championship. And Georgia's saying, like, hey, you're from here. Mm-hmm. We're right down the street. We're really good. Why are you leaving? And then you say to yourself, why am I leaving?
Yeah.
So your season matters. Like, one of the best recruiting tools you have is your season. And Michigan's season didn't help them. So I guess the question, and what Doug is asking, we know this is not a great class for Michigan. It's 21. They had top five classes the previous 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when you see that, Jim Harbaugh gets in. The last 2 years they have top five classes. This year they're 21, and they lose their best player on signing day. We're not Michigan experts. I talked to a guy the other day who is a Michigan expert, and I'll tell you what he said. But what's your inclination? Knowing what you know about Michigan and what you know about Harbaugh, is it your gut instinct that this is down year, blip, whatever, and that what happened the past 2 years is more of what they'll continue to do? Or is this the beginning of a downward trend in Michigan recruiting?
I think it's mostly a blip. And if you look at the 2019 class, they're off to a pretty decent start there. They have a five-star defensive end from Georgia. They have Nolan Rumler, who's a four-star offensive lineman from Ohio. They have Stephen Heron, a four-star defensive end from Kentucky, who was a five-star when he committed, and Ohio State wanted him. But I think something that is working against Michigan, and Urban Meyer mentioned this on Wednesday, is recruiting changes again this year. 2019 prospects are able to take official visits in June. And I think there are a lot of players that are going to want to wrap their recruiting up by the summer. And Michigan will not have the chance to put a good product out on the field to, like, change their fortunes a little bit. Because I think this is an important season for Jim Harbaugh and for Michigan to show that the program is not trending downward. And I don't think it is. I think they were just young last year. But there are going to be a lot of kids who have their mind made up already in June and then will sign in December. And that works against Michigan a little bit. So I think it's a blip, but the spot that they're in, I think, is a little precarious.
I would agree that it's a blip because we've seen Harbaugh just go out and land guys for the last couple seasons. Definitely, I do think the on-field product hurts Michigan, particularly on offense, where they have not been able to have a functional passing offense for the last two seasons. The defense has been great, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of guys returning on the defense. I'm wondering how much of a hindrance that is on this class, and that, like, top guys see guys like Rashawn Gary and Devin Bush and Kalik Hudson and David Long and see younger guys who are, like, stars on the defense and thinking that, you know, one or two of them aren't going to be there. Like, they're going to be there for at least another year, possibly two in some cases. Not Gary's case. He's going to leave after the season, but it's a young team that's got, like, a lot of younger players playing now. I wonder if some of those, like, prospects see that, because playing time matters to these guys, no question about it. And they see that maybe they're less inclined to want to go there. So that could be a thing. Just Michigan's lack of passing game functionality the last two seasons could be a thing, but limited numbers also. The only 19 guys in his class, they were in the mid-20s the last two seasons. When you have low numbers, you have to hope you can land guys, and they just didn't. No top 100 guys at all in this class for Michigan.
I'd say blip, too. The thing that I don't know about Michigan, though, is, like, what – and maybe I don't know it because I don't cover Michigan. Like, what is their, like, recruiting strategy?
Yeah.
You know, like, we talked about that a lot when Harbaugh got here of, like, okay, they hired this Chris Partridge guy from New Jersey. Are they going to hit Jersey hard? And, like, that can be a spot where maybe they can, like, box out Penn State and Ohio State and Rutgers as a non-factor and get really good Jersey kids. And then Harbaugh has got Andrew Luck out of Texas at Stanford, and maybe he's going to go and get a lot of Texas kids. I don't know that they have that at the moment. The one thing is their biggest problem has been, I think, offensive line and quarterback. I think they got some offensive linemen that they're okay with, but I know at quarterback they got this Joe Milton kid from Orlando who I think they really like, who I think was a priority for them. And then he was only – he's a four-star. He's the number 204 player. But then Shea Patterson from Ole Miss in the 2015 class, I think it was the number three player in that whole class, and he's transferring to Michigan. So he doesn't count in your recruiting rankings. He's a number three recruit who's been a starter in college at Ole Miss. So, like, he's not counting, but he's really going to count on the field.
Yeah.
So if they can get better quarterback play with Shea Patterson and then a guy they like in Milton behind him, and then I wrote earlier this year, you know, during the season about Brandon Peters and Dylan McCaffrey, they've got to get quarterback figured out, but they've got to get offensive line figured out in the name of protecting that quarterback. I think they'll be okay, and I think it's really interesting the idea of if Penn State, and this is what I wrote the other day, if Penn State can continue to do what Penn State did this year, which is a top five class, and Michigan can do what Michigan did the previous 2 years, which was a top five class, and Ohio State's Ohio State, like, hey, like, this is the real deal here. Like, to have
those
three traditional powers in the Big Ten East all recruiting at that level, we see the level that Ohio State and Penn State have played at. Michigan has not played at that level. But if they start recruiting at that level, like, we are going to see a renaissance in the Big Ten, even beyond what we've seen lately. And the Big Ten has gained all its respect back. People talk about the Big Ten East as maybe the best division in college football. And all of a sudden, if you have three programs recruiting at a level where they're getting top five classes, I mean, you're off to the races. And I think that's possible. I do think that's possible. And I'm going to take it. I think we're all going to take Michigan as a blip until it's proven otherwise. I have one more thing I want to get into from a big picture standpoint, because it's something we talked about at McDonald's. And I think it's an interesting thing to think about. But I want to get to a couple more questions. Buckeye Fitzy is our guy. And again, Bill has a really good story about Petit Frere and how all this happened. But this question relates specifically to that. Again, we give it to you guys in the podcast. Buckeye Fitzy. The boomtastic, which is the favorite adjective of the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. The boomtastic signing of Petit Frere seems like it wouldn't have happened before early signing day was a thing, because if Ohio State was all in on Jackson Carman as an Ohio kid and lost him to Clemson on signing day, they wouldn't have had time to go all in on Petit Frere. Mm-hmm. Do you agree? In other words, should Ohio State fans embrace this new double signing day thing as a serious competitive advantage in the world of, if you're an elite program, you take your shot at the guys you want, but if you miss, you get a second chance. And
yeah.
Ohio State is the kind of program, and there's three or there's not many. I don't think there's many, but I think there's three, four, five programs in the country that can maybe get in, not late on a kid, but can say, listen, we took our shot with these 20 guys we signed, and now, sort of in round two, we're going to see who's out there and go hard after them and be able to make up ground with some hardcore recruiting. Could this be a competitive advantage for a program like Ohio State?
I think it certainly was this year, and I think they played it right. Like, the plan wasn't to lose Carman. Obviously, they wanted him. But once that happened, I think they had a pretty good plan of attack, and they weren't – Urban Meyer – I asked Urban Meyer about it today, and he said – he, like, asked himself the hypothetical question, could we have gone all in on Nick if we were also keeping tabs on 15 other guys? And I think the obvious answer to that is probably not. And it also worked in their favor for Jean-Baptiste, and it worked in their favor for Walker, even though they didn't get him. Like, they were able to really prioritize a handful of guys. And then when it got down really to the nitty-gritty last few days and week or so before signing day, it was really three guys that Ohio State was keyed in on. So obviously that makes things easier, and it gives you a better chance. The thing that I wonder, and this is going back to the point I made for Michigan and the now ability for juniors to take official visits in June, is, and this is a thing Urban Meyer talks about all the time, is how the process gets sped up. I'm wondering if, now that we've gone through it once, players have been able to see kind of what the deal is, and now they can get on campus for their official visits earlier, if there are going to be even fewer guys available in the regular signing period. If there are guys available, then yes, it's to Ohio State's benefit, and I think they can game the system and do really well there. I just don't know if, and whoever the Nick Petit-Frere is in 2019, and I don't know who that is, but if that kid's like, you know what, I'm taking my visits in June, I'm making my decision in July, and I'm signing in December, and then that guy's not on the table for you to go get if you miss your guy at the same position on December 20th or whatever day it is.
Tim, you did a list before signing day of the 25 best available players, the highest-ranked players who were still on the board. Like, there were only a handful of, like, top 50 kids. There was Patrick Surtain,
Tyson Jr., Campbell.
Who everyone thought I think was going to go to LSU and went to Alabama. Tyson Campbell went to Georgia.
Petit-Frere,
Ohio State got him. We're not talking about like a million kids. Let's see this list. Like we're down to the number 6 kid overall among the best left, and he was number 39 overall. So that's telling you 33 of the top 39 were committed. Right. So like you're saying that like maybe there weren't a ton of great players still uncommitted. You think maybe there would be even fewer than if there were 33 of the top 39 committed by the initial signing day in December. You're saying in this next recruiting cycle it could be even more than that. So there's fewer elite guys left.
Yeah, I think part of the reason you still saw some guys not signed until February, and this isn't true for everyone, but some players can't take official visits during their senior seasons of high school football because they play on Saturdays. A lot of schools play on Saturdays. So they can't take their official visits until December and January. And if you want to be pragmatic about it, I don't think you're going to take 4 official visits in December and then make your decision on December 20th. But now you can take your official visits in June. Like your high school football season is taken off the table when you're trying to think about when to schedule your official visits. So if at least part of this crop of leftover players was left over because their high school season didn't allow them to take the important official visits they had to take, they can now take those 6 months earlier than they have been able to in the past.
That is a really, really thoughtful point.
Thanks, man.
And I thought of an interesting question. Sorry to
dovetailing
into this a little bit with the new spring and summer official visits. How much do you think that could that benefit Northern schools when they bring in Southern guys? Because you always hear the worries about, you know, most guys in the South want to stay in the South because it's warmer, but bring them up when it's nicer, and then they get a chance to look at, you know, what campus looks like when there isn't a foot of snow on the ground and they don't have to wear giant overcoats or whatever.
Yeah, I think it helps. I don't know. I think that can be overblown. Like Nick Petit-Frere from Florida, he visited Ohio State last week. It was cold, and it didn't matter. So, but there are definitely some guys who – I remember talking to like, the Tate Martell's dad before the year. Tate Martell's from California. His first month in Ohio – he said, like, I haven't seen the sun in 40 days. I want to leave. Like that happens. That's a shock for some guys. But I think maybe it's a little bit overblown. But you want kids to see your campus at its best.
I mean, I think the one thing that can happen is, like, I don't know if there's any player who would say, like, it snowed, I didn't go there.
Yeah.
But, like, I think you can, like, come on your visit and the weather be crummy and it have, like, a – subconscious effect on your like, I don't really like it here.
Was it a seasonal
seasonal affective disorder?
Yeah, sad. Seasonal affective disorder.
Yeah. Also known as the winter blues.
Yeah,
you get the winter blues and then you go to Georgia or Florida
or USC,
State.
Yeah.
And the winter blues don't exist there and it's not even that you don't even necessarily realize it. I'm going to give this one to Tim because we have no actual answer to this. So any of the three of us could make up an answer, and I'll let Tim make it up. Andrew Ardle, our guy. Alabama got off to a slow start this year in recruiting. Do you think that says anything about Nick Saban possibly on the decline?
Ooh.
No.
Negative recruiting.
I think Alabama, and I look at Alabama in a couple ways. Number one, they had limited space, no question about it. They only had, I believe, 19 commits. I'm looking at the exact number. They only had 19 guys commit, whereas most years they can get in the mid-20s, upper 20s. So for them, it's a numbers game, number one. And number two, and I think this is much bigger, they've lost 4 coordinators in the last 2 years. They've lost Kirby Smart to Georgia. They let go, Lane Kiffin went to Florida Atlantic. Steve Sarkisian was the offensive coordinator for one game and then took a job with the Atlanta Falcons. And that was before the season, so that's 3 gone within about a 13-month stretch.
And then Brian Daboll was the offensive coordinator this year and went to the Bills after the season.
And then Jeremy Pruitt's off Tennessee, so I was wrong. So it's 5 coordinators gone since the end of the 2015 season. I'm getting my math right on the fly right here. So that's five coordinators gone in less than 3 years. That would have an effect on anybody.
Yeah.
Especially Nick Saban, who we all know is probably the greatest coach since Bear Bryant. No question about it, I believe. That has an effect on everybody. No coach is going to be immune to when you lose that many assistant coaches, that many high-profile coordinators, the head coaching jobs, and particularly Kirby Smart is going to be the one that hurts because he's in a spot in Georgia where Alabama can get – used to be the number one team that can get all those guys. Georgia's just is capable of getting those guys. So I don't think it's as much about Saban. It's much more about – excuse me – anything about Saban being in a decline because he just won a national title, and he did so when he played mostly freshman in the second half of that title game. It's just about how he's had an exodus of assistants in the last 3 years.
He just made the most ruthless move I've ever seen a coach make and won a title doing it, and then, like, stole Patrick Surtain Jr. from LSU. Dude still got it.
Except they lost a guy named Bobby Brown to Texas A&M.
Mm. It was his prerogative, though.
True.
I say it's the beginning of the end. I don't.
Well, underrated thing also, Jimbo Fisher, Texas A&M, is going to be interesting because Jimbo is one of the best recruiters in the country. You talked about it before, Florida State. Now you got a coach in your own division who is as good a recruiter as there is.
You know, here's
I'm
my
not
prediction.
Totally sold on Jimbo.
Here's what I think is going to happen with Jimbo, who got a 10-year, $75 million contract and led Gene Smith on Wednesday to say, like, I don't believe in 10-year contracts. And he said, Alabama has to do what it has to do with Saban. And Texas A&M did what was best for Texas A&M. But he's like, I'm not giving anybody a 10-year deal. I think Jimbo Fisher, who seemed to get burned out at Florida State, I think is friends with the AD. He used to work with the AD at Texas A&M. Found a soft landing spot at a desperate program. Got a 10-year, $75 million deal. And I think Jimbo Fisher goes there and takes a 10-year nap.
Yeah. Keep getting them checks.
Non-factor. Two questions on this. This is always a good one, and we'll start wrapping up here in a little bit. Fez the Buckeye, our guy, and Tyler Shoemaker, also our guy. Best chances among the true freshmen to play in 2018. So when we think about... You know, again, if you would have asked us this question, probably they did ask us, and maybe someone could go find the old podcast. I'm not going to do it. I don't want to listen to that stuff. But, like, I don't know if any of us a year ago sat here and said J.K. Dobbins, not when you had Mike Weber coming back.
Yeah.
I think we would have said Chase Young. You would have looked at Chase Young and seen that possibility. I think I'm sure we talked about Jeffrey Okuda, because I remember writing about Jeffrey Okuda a year ago, saying this guy should start as a true freshman. He didn't start, but he played. I don't know. I think Petit Frere is going to be their number two left tackle. Currently on our depth chart is Joshua Alibi.
Yeah.
There's nothing against him, but I think there's a spot there, just like Thayer Munford came in and hit the two deep as a freshman tackle. I think – who's the defensive – I think Teron Vincent, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think Tommy Togiai and Teron Vincent both have chances to hit the two deep.
Yep.
We know Draymond Jones is their defensive tackle. We all like B.B. Landers and what he can bring to the table, but I think not start, but I think those two guys could be in that mix right away. I think Josh Proctor can get in the mix at safety. But if you said who has the best chance to start, I think there's a guy who stands out. Antoine Jackson, by the way,
just
another guy at defensive tackle. He's not a freshman.
Yeah.
This is a good defensive tackle group. Leading candidate to start as a true freshman, I think I have mine.
Oh, man.
I have mine, and I wonder...
Start?
I bet you Tim and I have the same one.
Rucker?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense.
He's elite, and there's opportunity, and that's nothing against Rashad Berry, but it's just they lost their starting tight end, Marcus Baugh, who had a good solid year as a senior. Rashad Berry is not a guy who's played tight end his whole life here. He certainly flashed at moments last season, but he's also played defensive end. He's been moved around a little bit, and Ruckert just seems like a ready-built tight end.
Yeah.
And so I don't know.
He'd be a little bigger. What's his
he's
listed 6'6", weight?
He's 6'6", 240. He's got to be able to block.
More than I thought he would be.
He's got to be able to block. So, I mean, he's probably – I'm sure he can catch it, but he's got to be able to block. He can definitely catch it, right?
Yeah, he's a receiver.
But the question is, even to do that, I mean, he's got to be Dobbins like. You've got to get here, but Dobbins was here
early enrollee.
As an early enrollee. Ruckert's not.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've got to get it mentally and emotionally right away. Boom, I can handle the pressure. I can handle the playbook. And then I think a guy like Ruckert is a guy who's skilled enough to do it.
Yeah.
But tight end's a little tough because you've got to be able to block too. And J.K. Dobbins, I think we talked about that during the year, probably wasn't as good in pass pro as Mike Weber was, but he was sure good running the ball. But I think, again, just balance of opportunity and skill set, I think he'd be the guy.
One guy I will say, and this is it's based on two things. One, that I think Draymond Jones is probably not going to play end. I think he's a tackle who will be part of the rush room package. And the other thing is, if they want to get to four defensive ends in their rotation, then a freshman has to play. And I think Tyreek Smith is really good. So I think you might see Tyreek Smith as the fourth guy in rotation. It won't be even, but I think he'll mix in a little bit, and I think you'll see him on the field.
You guys stole both of my answers and really explained them about the same way I would. So,
so we're here for steal answers. Eric Boggs.
What up, Wade?
Buckeye Boggs. With the perception that the offense will have a more accurate deep threat at quarterback in 2018 and a two-headed monster in the backfield, is it possible that Paris Campbell at the H-back spot could explode in 2018 with intermediate receptions and crossing routes? And then he has a food question. I think, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's the best run-after-catch guy they have. That's not close, in my opinion. Johnny Dixon's pretty good, but Paris is better. And I think Haskins, who's going to be the quarterback, will put the ball and the money to him, make it easier for him to catch. We know he has issues with his hands. I think a combination of accurate quarterback, short routes, fast guy equals lots of yards.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think throughout the season, the coaching staff definitely learned what worked best for Paris Campbell, i.e. crossing routes, bubble screens, even a tunnel screen and a reverse throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
He could be a guy where they're going to try and find him ways to get in the football, you know, 4 or 5 yards, because he is that guy, like you said, could turn 5 yards into 55 yards.
I still don't feel like they've used him the right way, though.
Nope.
I think they are far removed from 100% effectiveness of Paris Campbell in the game plan. With the things you talked about, Tim, but they've flashed it, but they haven't done it consistently.
I think if Paris Campbell is ever more than 8 yards down the field without the ball in his hands, you're doing it wrong.
Yes.
I agree with that. And it makes me want to look like how – and I have no idea the answer to this question. It means I'm bad at my job. And I'm going to use the PH word, which we managed to not say in a while.
Mm.
But how often did Percy Harvin get thrown the ball like 14 yards down the field? Weren't they flipping him stuff a lot?
Yeah, I think so. They were handing him the ball, too.
Yeah.
Didn't he take some Wildcat snaps, I think, back in Florida?
So, I don't want a Wildcat. I'm anti-Wildcat.
But I'm just like that because we're doing the Wild Tate. We know, Landis, the Wild Tate.
What about the Wild NPS?
I'm here for that.
Remember the little cat.
Remember the Belldozer at Oklahoma? This is the Belldozer plus.
Yeah.
Also, from Buckeye Boggs, sausage patties or sausage links?
Links.
No. All right, Tim, you break the tiebreaker.
They're both good, but I think I'm going to go with...
I mean, they're both good. They're the same.
No, they're not the same. I have an absolute a hard line.
It depends on the casing. It depends on the casing.
The casing?
Yeah.
Have you ever had...
But breakfast sausages typically don't have that kind of hard casing. Like, if you get, like, a hot sausage to make, like, a sandwich on the barbecue or something like that.
I feel like I've had links with the hard casing at breakfast.
I think you can get them, but you can also, like, if you buy the frozen box of, like, Jimmy Dean sausage links, there's no case on that. It's just the sausage.
It's just a patty rolled into. Yeah. So then it's not a true link.
Like, if you're grilling.
I guess that's true.
If you're grilling them yourself, though, I think that's a different thing. But
that's
a good
point.
I'm going to lean slightly more towards patty.
Because I think, because a true link has the casing. Otherwise, it's just a patty in the shape of a link.
Yeah, because the casing keeps them connected, which is why they're called links.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I don't want that casing. That
like
casing's
casing.
You like the casing?
I like a snap, yeah.
No, I think the casing is like skin on pudding. Like, I don't want that.
I like the skin on the pudding, too.
Well, then we disagree.
You think you can take the skin on a pudding and make that the casing for a sausage?
Yeah.
Okay.
I feel like the guys on Epic Mealtime would have done that by now if you could.
Because I feel, yeah, I, I like the patty because I feel like with the case, like I'm waiting for like you cut the link in half and that like the sausage is going to come spilling out of this case. Like it's just, I'm not in on the case. I'm way in on the patty. I eat sausage patties by the way, McGriddle. What's a McGriddle come with? Doesn't come with a link in the middle, comes with a patty.
Yeah, but
and McGriddles are God's gift to breakfast.
That's true.
This is actually a Jason R's, our guy. I'm just going to say our guy to everybody because you're all our guys and our girls, and we love you all. And do I want to say that we're having meetings about sponsorships?
Don't put it out there yet because if it doesn't happen, I'll be sad.
Okay.
But yes.
Journalism question. In situations like today with a big recruit announcing his decision, how do you guys approach writing the story? Do you have two stories prepared, one for each outcome? Or just like an outline and fill in the details?
It depends. I never do an outline. Especially if like the background information is background information. So, for instance, today, like I had a pretty good idea that Petit Frere, as did everybody, was going to commit. It was a surprise yesterday, but we kind of knew it was going to happen today. So I just pre-wrote that and had it ready to go. Same with Jean-Baptiste. I did not have anything written for Rashid Walker. If he would have committed to Ohio State, I would have been screwed. And if either of those guys had decided they weren't going to Ohio State, I would have been screwed. So I typically pre-write one story. I'm trying to think the last time I pre-wrote two. It's been a while.
Did you have two Jackson Carmans pre-written?
No, I had an Ohio State Jackson Carman written, and I was in the car on the way there, probably a half hour from Fairfield when I found out that like maybe it wasn't going to be Ohio State. So I wrote a story in the car, a Clemson story in the car on the way there. So I guess technically,
in the end, you had two.
In the end, I had two pre-written.
You didn't delete your Ohio State one.
No.
Yeah.
Not until after it was official. So yeah, I guess I had two pre-written there.
Yeah, but it's yeah. I mean, normally I think you go with. Very rarely is it like 50-50, right?
Yeah.
Usually you have a lean.
Yeah.
That you're, and so you write the lean, and then if it surprises you, it surprises you. But I don't know that you can go through life just writing extra stories that never see the light of day.
Yeah. Except for the list of potential replacements for Ryan Day.
Which we turned into content.
Yeah.
Vocal content. All right, Chad M. is just trolling me now.
He was trolling last week, too.
If it's the one you're thinking about, then I want to hear.
If one Ohio State football player fooled all of us and passed the Turing test and was actually a robot the entire time, who is it? So the Turing test, I think, is the test that they give you for are you really a person, right?
Does it have to be a current player?
I mean, it's like, is it... Is it an insult to say, I think you might be a robot, or is that a compliment? Like, I don't want to insult somebody by saying, like, oh, God, I really like you. I just think you might be a robot. Like, if someone said to you, like, I think you might be a robot, how would you feel about it? I know how I would feel.
I think that would be constructive criticism telling me to lighten up a little bit. I would be okay with it.
Unless you were just a gregarious MFing robot, man.
Yeah, that's true.
You are the funnest robot ever. All right, so I'm not sure I'm going to answer this. If you want to say which Ohio State player that you've known you think could be a robot.
JT Barrett.
I was thinking, I swear, the same thing.
I think there's a lot. There's a little robotic at times. Very monotone. Never showed emotion. Very rarely showed emotion. When he did show emotion, it was great.
I loved it when he showed emotion.
But even like in the way he played, I felt like if sometimes when he dropped back to throw the ball, I felt like I was like watching those Tom Amansky learn how to throw baseball videos where like the kids like jump into like four different positions and then throw the ball. That's how it looked like sometimes when JT, especially earlier in his career, was playing quarterback. I always thought there was a little bit, he could have been a little looser with the shoulders.
Yeah.
Like Cardale was. So yeah, there was a little robotronic from JT.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with Bill. And honestly, that question reminded me, I was thinking about you during the Super Bowl because I believe it was the second commercial was like a Sprint commercial with talking robots.
I got a couple tweets.
I was this close to tweeting you about that. I chose against it because I was actually working on other stuff at the time.
Have you read the stuff? I was reading this yesterday because SpaceX had that Falcon Heavy launch yesterday, and I was reading some stuff about Elon Musk. Elon Musk thinks like he wants to go to Mars in part because he thinks artificial intelligence is going to kill us all.
Yeah.
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 I read it, and I was thinking of you.
Thank you. Yeah. See, I feel like I'm waking up the world, at least our Buckeye Talk audience, to the revolution to come. Be on alert. I'm asking you to be ready. Be ready.
It was a terrifying story. I think it was on Mother Jones I was reading it, and they were like describing, like, you build a robot that is built to just play chess. But like left to its own devices, all it will do is try to figure out how to become better and better and better at chess. And like in its efforts to do that, it will like build better chess robots and then destroy the world. And then eventually it will no longer want to play chess, and then it's going to kill us all.
I think you just wrote the premise for the first episode of Black Mirror Season 5.
I never watched Black Mirror.
I feel sick now. I'm scared. For real. Now I feel sick. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I just want to go watch the Ohio State-Purdue game on TV. End my national
Just know that
day.
While you're I'm watching not... that, the TV's watching you.
Hey, at least Futurama had a party robot. Bender the robot, the party robot. If robots were more like him, I'm sure you wouldn't be as upset about it.
That's what I was going to say. That's my answer, is I think Tate Martell is a party robot sent here to destroy
oh, yeah,
you.
I'm down with that. I'll go out that way.
You know, the one robot sent back through time.
Yeah.
That's why he has all those extra Twitter followers.
Yeah.
All right. And on that note, after talking about which Ohio State player is a robot, I think we'll end Buckeye Talk. Thanks to you guys for your questions. We always appreciate it. Sorry we're getting this up a little bit late on Wednesday, but we definitely wanted to wait for this to happen. It was a day chock full of news. Again, to recap, if you need a recap, Urban Meyer is going to sign a 2-year extension in April once the Board of Trustees approves it. Basically, Gene Smith brought it to Urban's attention after the Cotton Bowl. They want to make sure that other teams can't recruit against Ohio State by insinuating that Urban is on the back end of his career. The 2-year extension will mean that he has 5 more seasons on his contract through 2022, and Gene Smith said that he thinks it's important for any coach to have at least 4 years on your deal so that everybody you recruit, you can say, I'm going to be here your whole career. So I think it made sense. I wrote a column about it. I don't know that him signing a piece of paper to say I'm going to be here 2 more years really tells you that much about his future here. After 2 years of a 6-year deal in Florida that was only officially announced a week earlier, he quit in Florida, and it didn't. The contract didn't mean anything. But I think what you saw from Urban Meyer and just where he is, he stood up there on National Signing Day and looked like a guy who had no interest in going anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's not about a contract and it's not about recruiting rankings. It's about a happy, energized coach who's doing a very good job and is enjoying his job. And I think those things are in place. They must replace Kerry Combs. Urban Meyer said maybe the next week, mm-hmm. And it sounds like there was a question about this. Someone said, who should replace Combs? We've kind of covered that. Tim had a list, but the one thing that we got from Urban is now that Shiano is staying and Grinch is here, he did say it's going to be a cornerback coach, that they're not going to like move Grinch to corners and hire like a special teams coach or something. Do you think in the end, in the shape of the staff, that makes the most sense? I actually wanted, and we can cover that really quickly, just on the defensive side of the ball. How in the end do you think this shakes out with all the responsibilities? Do you think Shiano is going to be the safeties coach? Do you think Grinch is going to be the safeties coach? If they hire the corners coach, what will Shiano's overall title be? How do you think this is going
to
work?
I don't think they have to hire a corners coach. Urban, I thought,
but Urban said that's what he thinks they're going to do.
I actually thought I read his answer as maybe a little more noncommittal than that. I think he just said that because it's the obvious thing to say. But I very much got a vibe that they would be okay and Greg Schiano would be okay coaching the cornerbacks. So if it's Schiano coaching the cornerbacks and Grinch coaching the safeties, and I don't even know, like, if that's the case, but you still want to bring in a defensive assistant, I don't quite know what that assistant does. But I don't think it necessarily has to be a cornerbacks coach. It could be, and then Schiano is, like, just the coordinator and is not tied to a position. I think that's possible, too. But I don't – if it's not a cornerbacks coach, I wouldn't be surprised by that.
Yeah, I would kind of lean as Giannotto being just the overseeing defensive coordinator, Grinch probably being co-defensive, and then safeties coach, you know, insert coach's name here, coaching corners, and then you still have Larry Johnson on the D-line and Bill Davis coaching the linebackers.
I do think I think that would make the most sense for Schiano to be have no position group that he has to be responsible for. So I think he could take over maybe even more sort of like overall duties with the program. And someone sort of suggested, I think, in a question to him today, like you'd almost be a head coach
yeah.
of the defense. I think that makes a lot of sense. But there's a lot of – I think Ohio State lost one of their grad assistants today who went to SMU to be the defensive ends coach at SMU.
They lost 2 grad assistants today. One went to the Titans.
And one went to the Titans. But, like, I think you could do – you could just hire whoever you want. And as you said, you could have Grinch – coach like, whatever. So say Schiano coaches the safeties and Grinch coaches the corners, or Grinch coaches the safeties and Schiano coaches the corners. Bill Davis stays in his role. Larry Johnson stays in his role. You could just hire, like, the best recruiter you could find. Mm. Say you hired Marcus Freeman from Cincinnati or something, who probably wouldn't come to be this, but it's like, and then you just make it that, like, he coaches the inside linebackers and Bill Davis coaches the outside linebackers. Or Larry Johnson coaches the defensive ends and somebody else coaches the defensive tackles. You could split stuff up in a weird way if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And it's just about eyeballs on the staff and recruiting power and all that kind of thing. So I think Urban Meyer stresses recruiting so much. I think it's possible now that you have Grinch and Schiano. I think you could, as I think you could just go hire the best recruiter you can find, knowing that you're covered, and then figure it out after the fact. You know,
maybe you would want a guy, with the idea in mind that you're probably not going to be able to keep Schiano again. Maybe you'd want a guy who skews more toward the secondary, but that guy doesn't have to have a defined position group when he comes here.
Yeah, but I think my guess would be that they, I'm going to guess they hire a corners coach, and then Schiano doesn't have a position group. I think that'll make a lot of sense. So there was that today. They'll figure out Combs. They'll have some announcements coming up, and then they ended up, you know, landing a 5-star on signing day, which is a big deal. So, final numbers: 26 in this class. We're going to have more stuff coming. We talked to, is it 8 or 9 guys who were enrolled early?
We got all 9.
So there's 9 enrolled.
8 true freshmen and Anton Jackson.
So we talked to them on Wednesday. Tommy Togiai.
Really like him.
Master Teague. 7 Banks, Antoin Jackson, Matthew Baldwin, Max Ray. Tim had some survey questions where he asked a bunch of guys in the class some different things about their recruitment, about Ohio State, about college football. We'll start trotting those out next week, so we have a lot of stuff coming. Signing day's over, but our coverage is not over. And then big basketball game tonight. It's going to be over by the time you listen to this, or at least partly over. But more coming, more podcast talk and more coverage coming on the Basketball Buckeyes as well. So thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks as always for your questions. You can read us at cleveland.com/OSU. You can follow us on Twitter at Tim Bielek, at Bill Landis 25, at Doug Lay Maurice. And you can subscribe on TuneIn, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple Podcasts. And we'll take your 5-star reviews. Any 5-star reviews pop in lately?
I've not checked lately. I'm sure there have been. Of course there have been.
Not as many as the Tomahawk podcast, which apparently gets like 1,000 5-star reviews a day.
That's Joe Thomas and AJ Hawk.
Andrew Hawkins.
That's not AJ Hawk.
But we'll take what we can get. So, for Tim, for Bill, I'm Doug. That was National Signing Day. And that was Buckeye Talk.